previously on Popping Collars.
Well, all I can go on is the wisdom of Yoda, or the Bible. I can't remember. Where it says, wars not make one great.
It's got to be Yoda. I feel like
that sounds like Yoda.
With truly,
is that
truly
Jeremiah? Is that Jeremiah? Okay. No,
it's got to be Yoda.
Welcome to Popping Collars, the podcast that lives at the intersection between religion and pop culture. I am your host. My name is Greg Knight. I am in Palm Beach, Florida, and with me are my co-hosts, Betsy Gonzalez from Alexandria, Virginia. Hello, Betsy.
Hey, Greg.
And Liz Easton from Omaha, Nebraska. Hello, Liz.
Hey, Greg.
And our special guest from Vancouver, British Columbia, as far away from me as humanly possible, just about, Vivian Lamb. Welcome, Vivian.
Thank you so much.
This is episode 30 of the 1,311th ranked podcast in the iTunes spirituality category. We moved up 100 spots. Thank you for subscribing to our show.
Yay, Star Wars episode!
I know, right? And our topic today is Master of None. So this is a little Netflix show that kind of came out of nowhere, but is noteworthy for a couple of things. One, it is a comedy with a lot of heart. And two, it features a diverse cast of comedians that we're not necessarily used to seeing in ensemble casts on television. So, Betsy, I'm going to start with you. What was the episode or what was the scenario that kind of hooked you on the show as you were watching?
I will admit, the first episode, I was kind of like, what's going on? Like, it was a little... I don't know. It kind of, you know, it was life kind of being hung together in a very regular way. But I was just kind of like, huh, I don't know how this is going to be, but I'm going to hang on. And then number two was the parents, and that, and I was all in at that point. And just that discussion, and I've watched his comedy and his discussion of his parents' immigrant story, his parents' arranged marriage. You know, the ways he looks at relationships and all those sorts of things, to watch that not on a comedy one-on-one, you know, guy with a mic on a stage, but actually in a narrative, in a story, that got me. I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, the stand-up comes alive in the story, and I loved it from that point.
What about you, Vivian? Where did you get hooked on the show?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I rewatched an episode today. I watched that Parents one again, and I realized that part of it was, I'm an immigrant, so I get some of the experience too. I sort of related a little bit to sort of the distance from your parents and not knowing the stories and sort of the sacrifices and all that. But part of me was also like, okay, this is a very sort of, I was going to say trite, but not exactly, because it's, you know, it's his experience and, you know, yeah, it's his own parents. So he's not making stuff up. And so I was sort of like, I think I watch a lot of the episodes with this sort of hold my breath kind of feeling. It's like, okay, he's making a point through his comedy and I see the point he's making. And I'm really glad he's doing it because we don't have enough people saying those things on screen. And I'm so glad to see someone who's not white, who's, you know, having success, and I want to support him. And I'm sort of, and it's not even like he's Chinese American, because I think I might have stronger feelings even with that. I mean, if I were to be honest, I would say that, you know, not all of it is particularly compelling, but I really appreciate what he's doing. And some of it's, I mean, he's just funny, you know, like I find his humor pretty refreshing and kind of like it's silly and it's all that. And then there are moments, like I was watching the episode with where he was talking about, it was the Ladies and Gentlemen, the one where they were looking at the women's stuff. And I felt like I mean, that was one of the ones I rewatched, where the beginning was just really kind of like, I felt like he was really setting it up in a very sort of, I felt kind of preachy way. It's like, okay, he's saying these things and I see where he's going with this. And then by the end of it, where he's having the fight with Rachel, and I felt like that was really like they just kind of melted into it, and that felt very, very natural, and I felt like that was he did it really well. And so I feel like the series is uneven for me, but I so appreciate what he's doing. And so, you know, I kind of stuck with it mainly for that, as opposed to being, you know, super drawn in for every episode.
the episodes focusing on a different topic allows you to kind of experience the show that way. Like, you know, does this episode speak to me? Does that episode speak to me? Yeah, how is he approaching this topic? How is he approaching that topic? So it's like, so we're going to exist in this world, sort of in this bubble, and how do these interactions work in this episode? And maybe that works and maybe it doesn't, and then we'll go into a different relationship and a different mode. And I think that's kind of what I took away from the show, was just the relationships. Certainly the relationship between Dev and Rachel, right? This romantic relationship that kind of overarches through the whole thing. But the relationships that he has with his friends, the unique relationships that he has, you know, that's how friendships work. You know, sometimes you're in a group, sometimes you're one-on-one, and you have different forms of interactions with the different people in those groups. That felt really authentic to me. I, you know, if I had to pinpoint what I really liked about the show, it was the way the relationships played out.
I love Denise. She is great. Like, just lays it down, tells it, I mean, just, yeah, but everything is really authentic. He's really, you see the striving, I think, in the relationships, striving to be a good friend, striving to be a good boyfriend, striving to be a good professional. Like, just, there's a striving to it. Life isn't just happening to him. He's making things happen. So mm-hmm. I like the authenticity of the relationships and how that plays out.
I thought part of what was interesting to me was he is exactly my age in real life and on the show. And there's something, I mean, I know that every kind of culture and even probably region here in the States experiences this differently, but there's something about your early 30s now that is like, oh, I'm an adult now. Like, I actually am. I'm not just pretending at it anymore. I'm not just wondering about it, but I actually am, whether I like it or not, and what kind of adult do I want to be? And I think that that was one of the themes that came up a lot in the show, that he's still a little immature and a little insecure, especially like the kind of ridiculous comments that he had about parenting and, you know, deciding whether or not to be a parent in the first episode. But to me, all of that felt really sincere. And I don't know if it was the striving that you were just talking about, Betsy, but like this idea of, you know, here I am. I'm not a kid anymore. I'm a real grown up. What does that look like in all of these different relationships?
I think the parenting episode stood out to me mainly because I have young daughters myself. So you kind of start to see yourself in, but the father, right, at the birthday party, when he's sort of talking about the sadness of the loss of his relationship with his wife and how irrevocably, like, adding kids to that scenario changed the way that that relationship works. And there was something really beautiful about that moment, right? So, like, the whole episode had the funny moments and stuff, but there's something about the vulnerability of that moment and the honesty of it and the fact that it was sad but not cynical,
mm-hmm.
you know? That's, I think, what I probably took away from the show the most, was that you can have sad moments that aren't, like, the world sucks, so, you know, why bother kind of moments. It's just how relationships work. It's just how people work sometimes.
Yeah, I felt that on the old people episode for sure, you know, when Arnold's grandpa, you know, dies. And that little robot animal that they have, the
that
little seal. Oh, my gosh. Like, you know, having worked with folks who in that age bracket, you know, and loving family members through that time. I mean, the number of Beanie Babies we cleared out of my grandmother's house when she died, I mean, God bless. Like, I still find them in my mom's house a little bit, kind of scrolled away. But, I mean, but not, you know, but in a way that's, like, hard to let go of them. But there's something about that time and being in that place. And I realized it just the other day, my father, my parents are now in their 70s, and the other day, my dad had knee surgery, right? So my mom was talking about...
My dad just had knee surgery.
Hold on, what? Listen, there are happy moments, there are sad moments, and knee replacement is one of those moments. But we were talking about him in almost this kind of othering kind of way. Like, he was mm-hmm. older all of a sudden. You know, well, you know how he likes the blah, blah, blah. You know, like, and I was like, oh, whoa. It feels like we're talking about Dad like he's an old man. And he's still dad who's like perpetually 45 to me. Mm-hmm. Like, but I'm the one who's 41 now. So what?
I mean, I think sort of, you know, as we're talking, I'm thinking about sort of seasons of life. And like, I feel like I've been thinking a lot because I've been I'm at the age now where I'm supposed to, you know, supposed to transition into sort of the part where I have kids and, you know, grow up and be an adult in that particular way. And, you know, for various reasons, I'm not at that point. And so, you know, sort of when I saw the episode with Dev talking to his friend who's the father, I don't know if I saw, I mean, I saw the authenticity and truth, like you're saying in it, but I also saw the disconnect, you know, I mean, because he also, like you're saying, he was still sort of, this is, I don't want kids because of X, Y, Z, and you don't really have a sense of that, you know, like you want to kind of shake him. The angst in the show is just sort of that disconnect of, well, which season am I in? And, it, you know, are the things really permeable or not? And I don't know, because I feel like all his friends are, the ones he hangs out with are for the most part in the same season. Yeah, it sort of unsettles me in that way because it reminds me of where I'm at. So, you know, I guess I related in a lot, a lot that way.
For me, the most relatable part of that episode, this is going to make me sound like such a jerk, but at the end when she brings the sandwiches home and then her little kids make her a sandwich and she eats it, to me that was like, oh, well, that's a litmus test. I'm not a mom. Like, I would have totally been like, bullshit.
Right, it's like a peanut butter and pickle sandwich.
Where is the sandwich?
Yeah.
I thought that was such sort of a true moment of like, oh my God. I don't know. I love that.
Yeah.
But I agree. I think it's the moments that have really gotten me are the ones that call me out, like you were saying, Vivian. Like, you know, kids change your relationship. Have I lost touch with that person who was Dev 10 years ago for me? You know, like, I think there are these moments, how am I being a daughter to a parent? And you get called out. And I think the show calls me out in ways that in the moment are uncomfortable, because sometimes it's not always the most attractive behavior or the best choice, or, you know, I want to get, you know, that Brian wants to stop talking to his dad so he can get to the movie early for the trivia parts. Like, he needs to go. Like, I need you to show me something on the computer or whatever. It's like, you know, I've really got to go to get to the, I like the Marina Munoz thing in the movie theater, the preview stuff. Yeah. So it's when I felt called out that I'm missing parts of my life or rushing through parts of my life or not appreciating things that are going on when I keep thinking about what's next.
Yeah, and you start to think about, well, the parents episode is a great one, because you start to think about what are the chasms that kind of exist between us and our relationships and stuff, and like, what are the experiences that, you know, creating distance between us, that sometimes you have to sit down at a table and have these conversations with each other, even if it's the most uncomfortable thing in the world.
And if they're awkwardly phrased questions that prompt these stories.
You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, because I feel like a lot of, you know, at least the episodes that I recall the best are the ones where he's really trying to understand another point of view. So he's trying to understand where his parents are coming from. He's trying to understand Rachel and all his female, you know, commercials, whatever, castmates, whatever you call them. And he's really, you know, like, you can see him visibly struggling on the screen. Yeah, and I think he kind of hemmed it up a little bit, but you can really, really see him. He wants to connect. He wants to understand. And I think the scene where Rachel's, you know, they're walking, I think when she's still, you know, pissed off at him and she's walking with him on the street saying, you just won't, you know, there's no way you can ever get my experience. And I don't know, you know, I was trying to imagine sort of like how he would feel in that moment, because, you know, it's like I've been doing a lot of thinking recently because I'm doing anti-racism work in our diocese, and so I'm thinking a lot about, you know, white privilege and sort of like different privileges that I have as a person of color. Like, I have different, you know, like, it's like there's so many different layers of experience that one can have. And just being, I think a lot of it is just coming to peace with, yeah, there are certain things that you will never fully experience, but, you know, how can you have empathy? How can you, you know, how can you still connect despite that? And, you know, it's absolutely necessary to be able to connect, to have any progress made on anything. I personally really struggle with that. Yeah, so watching him sort of do it on screen is interesting.
So what that brings up in my mind is the episode where you've got the two guys, two Indian actors auditioning for the same part, right? And this kind of expectation that, well, the world works with only one Indian actor
sure,
in that role. And this idea of, well, why, right? And just asking the question of why and pursuing that question of why for the whole episode. I think that just doing that helps the dialogue, helps the empathy, right? Because then you start to question, like, well, why does it have to be that way?
Well, that they don't leave the TV producer as a one-dimensional racist guy who uses curry favor in an email, you know? They don't do that. He then hangs out for, you know, an entire day in the Knicks game and
with Busta Rhymes,
right? Like, he doesn't, he doesn't even leave that character one-dimensional to try to understand his perspective.
I thought he was really, actually, I kind of disagree. I felt like he was pretty one-dimensional. Like, I felt like he was, you know, sort of in the sense of not necessarily being personally racist, but being institutionally racist.
Oh, sure. But I liked how they didn't just leave it. They kept throwing curveballs in it. But that was still at its core. He used that in an email. It's bad. You know, and is also supporting the keeping of television shows the way they are. I mean, media has its roles. And you can't have, you know, more than one female lead, or you can't have more than one, you know, whatever.
Or Buster Rhymes, like, giving Dev the advice, like, I don't remember what he said exactly, but basically, don't rock the boat, just, you know, you can
yeah,
bide
just
your
go
time.
With right. So I did.
And then don't play the race card, charge it to your race card.
Yeah.
Which I thought
very memorable
all of
line.
Really interesting. Really good line.
Diversity on television is basically, do you have, like, one character sort of check boxes, right? Like, we've got this character, we've got this character, we've got a person of color, you know, we've got all these boxes kind of checked. And now we're starting to see, like, no, that's not how media has to work, right? Empire is the biggest television show on network television right now. Empire is mostly African-American cast. Like, that's kind of the new world, but it's still, like, these small chunks, right, that you kind of get that sort of feel like test shows in a way. But, and it's like, how do you have really authentically diverse television when you keep running into these roadblocks of, well, we can't have two Indian guys on one show, right? Because that's something that we inherited.
It's not happening on network anymore. It's now on Netflix. It's now on Amazon. You have shows like Transparent and this show, you know, other shows that are just pushing the boundary and saying, you know, it's just really amazing in terms of female writers and directors and putting out a different mindset. I love the conversation that Dev and Ravi have about, oh, well, we've only just recently been able to have two gay characters on a show. Like, you know, there's all these markers, right, that oh, well, we can do that now, but we still can't do this. Then it will become an Indian show or a girl show or whatever. And so it's like we've had to move off of network television to actually start embracing that diversity. And it's just beginning, I think.
Like, is there something about popular art or popular culture that makes people want to put things in categories so that it's simple? Or is that, like, what's behind that kind of institutional approach to popular media?
Racism.
I was going to say,
yeah,
money.
Well, I mean, that.
Money.
Well, I mean, you know, there's that.
Test marketing, demographics.
I'm just wondering, like, I mean, is this, honestly, like, lowest common denominator appealing to the basis instincts of who consumes this product? I mean, I just don't.
The people in power. It's, you know, sort of, and I think the Netflix and, you know, sort of all these alternative venues are this, you know, the new spaces that we have now that allow for that experimentation. It's like, oh, actually, people will watch that. Okay, maybe now we'll consider it. And so it's just the normalization. So we're in the process of normalizing stuff. You know, obviously, still a long way to go, but
normalizing it on. In places where you really have nothing to lose.
Yeah,
right? Where
I mean, that's how I feel.
It's not about ratings, right?
Well, you know, I mean, but it's sort of just like, well, this is a low-risk venture, so, you know, if you have success now, we know that it will actually work. So, okay, I'll be brave enough to put, you know, like, two women in lead roles, whatever. We'll start with the women, and then we'll get to the people of color.
So what did you guys think about Rachel?
I liked kind of all of the storylines about their
the development of their relationship, because it feels like we're in this weird relationship, like borderland right now with the internet and with how we think about commitment and all kinds of things. So for them to start with like their first date, they're having sex and there's a, you know, problem and they have to go buy plan B. Like, it just, how awful to be in this super intimate situation with someone that you literally don't know. And I think that they played on that in a pretty smart way. And then he takes her on a date by flying her to Nashville, which was crazy and a thing that I can totally picture people doing. And so I sort of liked the development of their relationship and that it just showed how absurd things have kind of gotten in the way that people meet each other and get to know each other and develop relationships. And I know that in his stand-up, he talks about sort of relationships in the midst of the internet age. But I thought that was all pretty smart.
Well, the temptation to blow it all up, too. To you know, well, I'm moving. I'm going to go do something. I mean, but maybe I did. Maybe, well, I'm going to quit my steady job and go become a priest and go to the seminary. Maybe I did blow it up a little bit. I mean, I didn't go to Tokyo. And maybe it's more than I did. I blew it up, but I took a posse with me with a spouse and a kid. So I didn't kind of do it alone. There's something very, very brash and bold and brave about that I kind of look at with kind of a, oh, that's cool, kind of.
Drop everything and go to Tokyo?
Right, or I'm going to go to culinary school.
I must admit the last episode is like, what, at the end? And part of it was like, I hadn't remembered that, you know, I had to look back. It's like, oh yeah, she mentioned something about going to Tokyo and her sister and stuff. And I feel like her character hasn't been written really strongly. So like, she was kind of like, she's always been kind of like the comic, whatever, you know, she bounces jokes back to him and they're obviously a really great match and stuff. But I feel like her story has always been really in the background. I mean, even just like the idea of her leaving to go to Tokyo and him leaving to go to Italy. Yeah, I feel like my vocational journey has definitely been let's drop everything and just do this crazy thing. But I may just be my personality, but I wouldn't do it without a really strong sense of calling. And I felt like the way that they wrote it out, it just seems more like I don't really know what I'm doing. And I just feel like, I mean, there's some sense of call. I guess she's been drawn to, you know, Japan or something, but it's not like there's no, there's not really a clear sense of discernment and call about that. It's more like, I'm going to go and find out more. And that is really terrifying to me. I don't think I would do that.
No, but it was about avoiding commitment and their whole relationship. Like, I just think was this weird kind of rewriting of what it means to be committed and to be intimate or not. And totally, in my mind, messing up the order of how that works. And
do you think there's something selfish about either of their choices? Like, do you think that there was something selfish about going to Tokyo? Because when am I ever going to get a chance to go to Tokyo? Or, like, I'm going to Italy because I love pasta and it helps me avoid you.
Right.
Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, this is interesting, right? This idea of vocation, this idea of calling, because at some point, you had the experience that felt your calling to the priesthood, and yet these other people were kind of drawn into that world with you.
Well, and so I had friends tell me they thought I was nuts. Not because didn't think I'd do a good job, but because they're like, no, this is your 30s. This is when you're supposed to amass individuals, reproduce people, have money, get a house to put it all in, like, that's what you're supposed to do when you're 32. You're not supposed to be like, I'm moving to California, right. You know.
But if your spouse says, you know what, I don't think I can handle that.
Right.
Like, where do you live in that space? Mm-hmm. Right. Like,
Yeah. No, he didn't say no. I think maybe there's some moments he's thought about it afterwards. But yeah, no, I don't know whether it's selfish, but it's definitely fearful. It's definitely out of a place of scarcity that at least her decision, I feel.
I don't know. I mean, like, thinking back to my journey, it's like, I took a year off to figure out where I was going. So I did like an internship program like Liz did and stuff. And so there was a little bit of that. Like, I don't really know exactly where I'm headed. But I think the intention was definitely I'll find something. And, you know, and I really thought very carefully about what impact that would have. And I was lucky I wasn't, you know, in a serious relationship at that point. I didn't have kids to kind of tow along. And I think perhaps if I had been in that life stage, it might not have played out the way it did.
There's always something that it feels like you have to push through, like in relationships, you know, just thinking about the show, right? And the messy floor, you know, like that was something that it was clear that they were going to need to work on. And it was either going to become a thing that was going to sort of start to drive them crazy and drive them apart, something sort of that simple, or they were going to work through it and figure out how to keep a clean or dirty floor, right? Like it was going to, you just kind of work itself out. And I know that.
It's not simple, Greg. 13 years later, I'm telling you, it is not freaking simple. Argument about the messy floor.
It's lazy to think that it should be like morning number one, you know, from that episode, on morning number, you know, 452. Like, it requires compromise, and it requires, you know, figuring out how are you going to follow your calling and support your partner's calling at the same time.
Your face, your hair, your sense of humor, your waist, your skin, things you watch on TV, your smell, your feet, your sudden anger. Show me if you care. I wanna change you. I wanna change you. I wanna change you. I wanna change you.
So we can move on to our Go In Pieces segment. This is a chance to talk about something from pop culture that we're currently watching, listening to. So I'm going to go in order as you are on my screen. So Liz, what's a piece of popular culture that you are currently consuming?
Well, I just binge watched, along with probably most people, or a lot of people at least, Making a Murderer on Netflix, which is amazing. It's a story. It's a documentary. It's a serialized documentary about a family in Wisconsin and a man who was wrongfully convicted for a sex crime and served 18 years in prison for that, and then was exonerated. And he sued the county sheriff's department. And then he was arrested and tried and convicted of a murder, the idea being that maybe he was framed and set up for it. It was fascinating. It felt a lot like listening to Serial, the first season of Serial. It would have made a great episode of that.
Cool. Betsy, what's a piece of popular art that you are currently consuming?
Okay, so we have Serial is back, so I'm that's back. Downton Abbey just came back. But, I mean, to continue on the theme. You know, Ken Burns. Okay, so now I finished the Civil War. I finally finished the Civil War. So then I start watching The West.
Oh, that's a good one.
Very interesting. And it then, all the stuff that's happening in Oregon with these guys and the land and all this stuff, that it's all the same. It's all tied to the same history. It's all the same stuff. And I was just like, oh, see?
And the same kind of strange religious freedom
stuff. Yes. Yeah. And so it's, I mean, all it needs is an actor reading a diary entry and the soundtrack, and it could be another chapter in the West.
Vivian, what's a piece of pop culture that you're currently watching or reading or whatever.
I must admit that like I've been totally drowning in work the past month or so. So I was trying to remember the series before like the work started getting crazy that I was watching. I totally don't remember the name. It's the it's a Netflix series where there's like a bunch of people who are connected psychically.
Ooh, Series 8?
Sense 8.
So that's one. So just Wachowskis. It's been like, you know, has got me thinking about sort of how people are connected, how we sort of relate to one another, and sort of supernatural stuff too. So
we have over 100 Twitter followers to our show, and that's really fun and cool. And one of the things that happened fairly recently that kind of blew my mind was it was National Podcast Day. I don't know if you knew that that was even a thing.
I got no cards.
Earlier last year, it was National Podcast Day, and one of our followers was sweet enough to say that we were one of his favorite podcasts to listen to, and then listed like a bunch of other podcasts along with ours. And so I went back and kind of added those to my queue. But one of them that I really loved, and I can't believe that we were mentioned in the same company as this other show, is one called The Lapse. As in, like, a lapse of judgment. And it's a storytelling podcast. So once a month, they'll bring somebody on to tell a story. And it's always something different. Kind of guessed at The Lapse. It's a great show. So anyway, you can follow us on Twitter if you want to be one of our over 100 followers. You can follow us at Popping Collars. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/poppingcollars, where you can like our page. You can no longer friend us. Facebook cracked down on our friend page, so you have been added to our like page, so you can only like us from now on. But we still consider you a friend on Facebook. And you can always find our show at poppingcollarspodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts. But if you get your podcast from iTunes, please subscribe so that we can move up in the rankings. And finally, we also want to give a big shout out to EpiscopalCafe.com for featuring our show each and every time. We love Episcopal Cafe, and we hope that you'll check out their articles whenever you're looking for news about the Episcopal Church and beyond. So with that, that's Popping Collars for this time. Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Betsy. Thank you, Vivian, for being on the show. We'll see you next time.
Keep those collars popped.